Welcome to the dark part of video game voice acting revealed. My name is Richard Rouse. I'm a game writer, game director, and stuff. I worked once upon a time with a couple of people on this panel, and I'm currently working with more people on this panel. We'll get to that in a minute. I worked on a game called The Suffering a while ago. I worked on with John, and we're all, John, Ellen, and I are now working on a game called The Church in the Darkness, which you'll hear more about later. But I'm going to have everybody. Thank you, Ellen. So I'm gonna have everybody go down the line, introduce themselves, and maybe do a few lines in their signature character of their choosing. So Ellen, why don't you start?
We're a lot alike, you and I. You tested me, I tested you. You killed me, I. Oh wait a minute. I guess I haven't killed you yet. You monster.
That was Alan McLean, if anyone missed that.
I'm John Patrick Lowry, and my biggest claim to fame is that I get to sleep with Alan McLean every night. Listen, when there's deadly neurotoxin in the house, you bring it, you know what I'm saying? I'm the sniper in Team Fortress 2, among other things.
I'm not a crazy gunman, Dad. I'm an assassin. The difference being one has a job and the other's mental sickness.
Hey, everybody. My name is Logan Cunningham. I work with a developer called Supergiant Games. With this guy. This game was called Bastion, and it was on
everybody, this is Logan's very first panel, so go easy on it.
Everybody go.
He gets up, heads off to the Bastion, where everyone agreed to go and gets trouble. Ground forms up underneath his feet as it went away. You don't stop to wonder why.
Oh, and we also did a transistor.
Hey, Red. I'm not going to get away with this, are we?
My name is Darren Korb. I'm the audio director for Supertime Games. I don't have a particular voice to do for you guys.
Yours is pretty good. Just do yours.
I'll just do my, this is my signature voice, the one.
My name is Elias Effects. I've been in a bunch of games, but I think the most popular one, I guess, would be Adam Jensen in Deus Ex. I never asked for this.
So the thing I was interested in, you know, as a fan of all these people's work and stuff, was interested in hearing some of the stories of how these characters came to be, because it's interesting, you know, I've worked on the writing side and done voice directing too, and, you know, Darren's done voice directing. And it's just interesting to hear the stories of how these characters evolve, because, you know, we know what they sound like and we love them, but how did it get there? Did it start that way, or did it change along the way? So maybe, starting at the end again with Ellen, it'd be interesting to talk about, like, the process you went through with GLaDOS. Like, how similar was what we just heard you do so effortlessly to what you started out with?
The initial voice of GLaDOS, of course, was they used as a placekeeper in the game, they used a computer-generated voice. And they sent that out to the agencies and wanted women to try to sound like a computer. And I got the closest. And then, of course, after she loses the morality core, she finds her inner being. And so the voice had to change, and I actually just you know, with the writers and with the producers in the studio, I just tried a lot of different things, and it ended up killing you and giving you good advice on Mutually Exclusive. That's where it ended up. So that's how the voice developed.
I mean, did it start off with that idea that you go from the fully, you know, computer thing that they were sending out the audition thing to the more human, or did that come in?
I didn't even know I was doing a game when I first started recording. Truly. So, I mean, they had to explain a lot of things.
And did you try a bunch of different stuff in terms of getting the human version of GLaDOS?
Oh yeah, we tried different things, and then also the turret voices, you know, that was also just discovered in the studio. But literally, at one point when I was recording for Portal, I you know, looked through the glass into the control booth, and I said to Eric, I said, oh, wait a minute, am I lying to the player? And Eric said, yes.
They weren't always clear with the direction up front. That's what you're saying.
Well, I think the direction for each line was clear, but they didn't know that they were dealing with a game novice. Although I had done other games. When I did Overwatch and Half-Life 2, I didn't know it was for a game.
She pretty much doesn't know what's going on. Right?
The only man who can get away with saying that. Cool. So, John, let's talk a little bit about the sniper character and how, I'm curious, because that's obviously, like, with GLaDOS, she's there all the time in the game, front to back. And with Sniper, you're more hearing him in little bits along the way. Did you do the little, like, the in-game stuff before you did, like, the trailer piece? The short
game? Yeah, they did the game first and then came out with the Meet the Everybody series. So, for those of you who are interested, when you get an audition for a video game character, they'll send you the artwork, what the guy looks like, and you know, brief description of what he is, you know, the kind of person he is. I had already worked for Valve on Half-Life 2. Ellen and I both had, and so they knew me, and they thought, oh, let's, you know, send this out to John and see what he does with it. And they actually suggested that he might have an Australian accent because he wore the campaign hat and stuff like that. And so I did, but they asked me for a couple other things too. So I did a couple of different things, but they liked the Australians best. As we got into the domination lines, when you're playing the sniper and you beat somebody else 3 times in a row, they'll say something like, you know, hey, the bullets come out of the slim end, mate. You know, that was so easy, I think I'm getting worse, and stuff like that. That you know, we started finding the comedy in the guy, and this wasn't really true in Half-Life 2. Although I did play the one comic character in Half-Life 2, I played Odessa Cubbage, who's this kind of classic World War I British officer, saying, "Oh yes, you know, how do you use this rocket launcher and go out there and fight?" And I'll say, "You know, when it's safe, you know." So, so I think, you know, when I did Odessa, they knew what I could do with comedy. And so it was really finding that rhythm, because you have various places in the game. Sometimes it's just action. You need to get stuff done. You need to, you know, guys need to move the wagon up, and we need more help or whatever. And there's a lot of action. You're crying, you're shouting over action, stuff like that. And then there are times when you're more calm, particularly as the sniper, because I don't know if you play TF2, but what the sniper does most of the time is turn coffee into urine, which he then uses as a weapon. And he puts the urine into jars, and he calls that gerate. But he's a sniper, so he's just waiting up someplace high to shoot people. And then we made Meet the Sniper, and that was great fun for me, because when he actually calls his mother and father on the phone, and we get to find out that this guy actually has a mom and dad who don't really approve of his line of work and stuff like that. It was really great. And as the game has gone on and developed, and they've added more stuff. I mean, they added a Halloween packet where, you know, I turned into an owl And there's a new packet where we all dance in a conga line. And they actually had me to hip-hop some conga music for a while. And I came out of the line of, look at my back! It's an Aussie back! And stuff like that. And, so, you know, there is some improvisation. But mostly, when you're working with the director of a video game, you're trying to find out what the game needs at that moment. They write a bunch of lines, and then they're going to use them in various places in the game. And so you may say the same line three or four different ways, because one time it's loud and you're talking to somebody far away, one time you really need to be sneaking around and talking to somebody who's next to you, and stuff like that.
So it's interesting, it started off with the bits before it got to the part of the character development. Like,
right,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess we should get the personality.
Yeah, yeah.
The classic video game development is like, oh, just make it work. Oh, could it be interesting too?
Right, right. Well, that goes back in the early days of video games, but that's another
Yes, game. That's another story. So let's go on to the, we were talking before, you guys, about the Transistor character and how that, like the Bastion character, it sounds like it was more established at the start, and then you kept doing it over iterations just to get the content of the game. But the Transistor character was more nuanced and complex and hard to land. So could you guys talk about the process you both went through on that?
I mean, so the only reason we have jobs at Supertime Games at all is because of the co-founder of the company, Amir Rao, who you've known since second grade.
Yeah, we were, I think it's fourth, yeah, we were third or fourth grade. We were about 8 years old when we met.
And I met you and Amir in 1998.
Yeah.
I met him in like April and I met you in September.
Yeah. So, yeah, so, you know, Amir was starting this company and basically just asked me, because we've been friends for a long time, and if I wanted to do all the audio and everything for...
So they had no money, so you asked your friends.
Yeah.
They
couldn't get a real, you know, guy to do it. They couldn't afford it, so they had me do it. And, and Logan and I were roommates at the time. So that's kind of how we all got involved in Supergiant. I've been working with Supergiant ever since. And so Transistor was pretty... So Bastion, you know, we had the narrator of Bastion is like fairly kind of an outside-in type character, where it's just getting the feel of the character right, and you kind of develop the rest as you go, just getting the sound of the voice. And that was fairly easy to land pretty quickly for us. I think we got it very, very, very quickly, and so we just
got it. The Bastion voice, by the way, is three ingredients. It's Al Swearengen from Deadwood. And Daniel Day-Lewis, Bill Butcher from James Newby.
Gates of New York.
And then, Sam Elliott, the narrator of Big Lebowski.
Yeah. So it's like those three things, like in one. So anyways, by contrast, Transistor was a lot harder for us to arrive at what we wanted for the character, because we were trying to do a lot of different things narratively with the voiceover in that game. And it was just a lot more nuanced, and there were not a lot of trope kind of things involved with that character, and it was very much just like a companion character that was very nuanced and subtle.
The thing that made a good take on Bastion was that it sounded like the guy. And what made a good take on Transistor was performance, like was the acting good.
Yeah, so that definitely it was a totally different challenge for Transistor than on Bastion.
And do you guys have any, like, you specifically look at, have any examples of, like, the earlier incarnations of the voice before it landed in?
Oh, God, we tried, like, this, the weird, I don't know why, we tried this, like, South African,
you know, so you want to give us a sample?
So you just would say, like, Transista. And we were like, well, it's kind of interesting, and then we all kind of, like, woke up and, like, what's that?
Why?
Yeah. You really find it's like Logan, your voice is fun.
Yeah. So do yeah. And we tried a few other things. We wanted to, I think part of the reason for trying a lot of different things before we ended up just arriving at Logan's voice, Logan's basically regular speaking voice, was, you know, we wanted to add some sort of exoticism maybe to the character, but in the end I think what was more important than that was just getting it to be a genuine character that you could relate to and trust and like quickly, and I think Logan's voice does a good job of that.
Thank you. That's a long friendship. part of the session. let's go to Elias here and talk about, right, Adam Jensen is, as you said, what most people know you as. So it's basically you.
It's basically me.
Is that where it started? And how did it
start? Well, if I remember this one was the first game was, gosh, in 2007, we started auditioning for it. And they just brought me in video games, they don't tell you anything. They make up a name, like this one's called Sigma, and or this one's called whatever, because they don't want you to talk about it, they don't want the people who audition to go and talk about it. So they didn't tell me what it was. I knew what Deus Ex was, the original game back from 2000, but they didn't tell me anything. So I went in and like, what do you need? Like, we need somebody who sounds like Clint Eastwood. And I'm like, so me. And she said, yeah, do that, basically. And it was interesting to find the character. You're talking about finding the character and experimenting. I don't know why they did this, but in the first game, if you play Human Revolution, there's a scene where Adam goes up and talks to somebody at a police station, and there's like a debate, which is a big thing in this game. We have long debates. And it must have been one of the first sessions we had done. I was still, I guess, trying to find the character. And I have some weird Brooklyn accent. And they never took it out. They never had me. So I play the game, and they're like, hey, how you going over here? I sound like friggin' Joe Pesci. And they never got me to redo it. And I can't play the game. Every time I play it, I'm like, what? This would have taken 2 hours, and I would have fixed it. I would have done it for free at that point, just so I didn't have to sound like Joe Pesci in that scene.
When you have to ship the game.
Yeah, they had to ship the game.
So that was like an earlier incarnation that never got.
Yeah, I mean they had the audition like me, and then I guess we were experimenting. I like do that one day and they press record, I guess. So I did, and they just put it in the game. It always bothers me. And then yeah, so I've done two games as this character now, and the first one was I think the whole game was kind of trying to figure out the character because there's so much dialogue. Because I don't know if you guys know the game, but it's every character you meet has branches and branches of dialogue choices that you can make. So I had to record every one of those. And the interesting thing, from an actor's point of view, I had to justify every one of them, even the ones where I'm like, who would do that? Like there's one point where you meet your girlfriend who just got killed. You meet her mother. And she says, how did she die? And you have a choice to vividly describe exactly how she died. Like, perfectly describe it. Because, and I was like, who would do this? But as actors, you gotta figure out how to justify, okay, I'm gonna do this now. And so my point is that I learned a lot in that game and in this game, which is the same, it took 2 years to do. I find that it's a much better performance because I know the character a lot better.
Right. One of the benefits to sequels, I guess.
Yeah.
You have to spend the time in Brooklyn.
And also, they couldn't do it without me, so I got to ask for more money.
Oh. They could just get Penny
Swings. I think you might have been slightly more expensive.
Cool. It's a special challenge, I guess, to be the player character.
For sure.
It's like most of the other characters we're talking about, you know. I mean, I guess sometimes we play the sniper, but it's still more of a character who isn't the player, where it, Deus Ex, it's more of an assault for the players.
Yeah, so that was actually part of the idea behind it of being very kind of like I don't bring the emotions up to any sort of higher level. When he's angry, I'm angry, but I still kind of leave it in a place where the player can print his or her own kind of emotions on the scene.
So that was intentional. And like were they asking for that?
Yeah. It's much like the first game. It's much like the first Deus Ex. The first Deus Ex, everything sounded like this. Oh my God, that bomb. So I tried to kind of attribute that while actually acting, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, like when I sound like Joe Pesci.
We have only 15 more minutes with John, who has to go, and Elias has a Deus Ex panel right after this at 3 o'clock. If you
lovely schedule.
After we're done, you can run to that, but not before we're done.
So it'll be rude, but he's going to be rude than we before. So.
But we wanted to talk a little bit about the current project before we open it up to questions. So I think John and Ellen had something prepared. We want to start getting that out. But we've been working together on a game for, I guess, it's a couple of years now. This Church of Darkness, which is the indie project that we're doing. And that I wanted you guys specifically because you're a husband and wife, and I see you're great theater stuff. And I knew you could do more than sort of the awesome stuff you do for Balco, which tends to be more communicative and more abstracted. So.
Well, it was fun for us because it's the first time that, I mean, you know, usually, as you guys all know, voice actors are called in after everything else is done practically. And you just plug into it. And Richard had this idea for a game in Church of Darkness where the story would be actually driven by the voice acting, where you're hearing a husband and wife who are the leaders of this cult constantly talking to their flock over the PA system. And part of the player's job is to judge the sanity or insanity of the leaders of the cult. Are they nice? Are they just weird hippies in the woods? Or are they perhaps dangerous? Since Richard had worked with me back in the 90s, he called me up and started working.
Was it 2000?
Was it 2000? It was just before now. I'm old. And actually, you know, talking to him about what the character would be like, and we, Alan and I were talking, and we felt that, and Richard agreed that probably Isaac, who's my character, is more of the spiritual, philosophical guy, and Rebecca is more of a political
businesswoman.
Yeah. So
takes no shit.
Kind of Timothy Leary and Hillary Clinton, you know.
I never said that.
No, I never said that. But it was fun being able to be in on the ground floor and decide how this would work, because the voice acting in Church of Darkness really is acting. I mean, there are places where we have to dig down pretty deep because that's part of the story.
Yeah. And the other thing, so we're not running out the clock too much here, is you guys are also doing music.
Right, yes. Richard asked us to write songs over the final credits because Ellen is, I guess, famous for doing songs over my work.
And I knew John was quite a musician and had, you know, background writing stuff and spent the 70s as a wandering vagabond musician himself or something.
Well, his album, FFWA, with his partner Ron Keith, got 4 stars in Downbeat Magazine.
So,
Mr. Lowry is a wonderful composer and musician. And this...
Yeah, so this is a song that I wrote just about 3 months ago. It's called Lost Along the Way. And it was kind of a challenge coming up with songs to finish a game about spiritual leaders who might have gone too far, might have taken things in a bad direction. And so this is kind of a song of forgiveness.
Thank you. If we stand and if we run, we can't root the odds. The path is over, hope to find. And we're lost along the way.
Any songs, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
If you guys are interested, we have, there's some stuff up online. You can check it out at our booth on the fourth floor to the right behind the behemoth there. We're showing a demo.
But then for you, it's really different because this cast is humongous.
Oh yes, that's also different. Yes, this cast is humongous compared to our other games. And there's way more characters than just the scope of all the voiceover in the game is, you know, exponentially more huge than our previous games. There's only one character who speaks in English, but the rest are in this sort of native language, which is not any less challenging necessarily. There are different challenges with it, but
so that Ray Tassano
He's insane. Yeah, he's doing pulling like a full on Tolkien and writing like this whole language. Yeah,
we all can learn.
Yeah.
And it's, as a writer, it is great when you get to that point where you really know an actor and can say, I wrote this with you in mind, which I think doesn't happen enough in video games, because so often it's like, oh, we got to cast all this, and we only see the actor once or twice during the whole project or something, and instead it's like, you and Greg's relationship with you guys. And so,
you guys are besties. Yeah.
So I guess, unfortunately Elias and John have to leave us in a few minutes, so I wanted to ask, because you have that Deus Ex, but I don't have that much.
I'm
just saying, just plugging again. But so your current project is
kind of
Deus Ex. I mean, is there?
Yeah, actually, we got a DLC coming out next in 2 weeks. Are we already September? Damn. So yeah, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Throwing all throwback. September 23rd, we got the DLC coming out, and now I'm going back and working on the next DLC, which is coming out in 2017. And and the other ones I have are redacted and things I can't talk about.
And did you find that the Deus Ex writers too for the second one were more writing to you, knowing your original thing?
Sure, but specifically because I was able to work with them a lot more. You know, during the game for the first time, this is a massive game. I was just doing it with the trying to do my best. But the second one, it was a lot more. And I do a lot of performance capture in the game, which is a different story than voice behind, but it's a lot of, like, anytime there's a scene with CG and it's cinematic, that's moving my body, my face, everything being captured at the same time. And that kind of stuff is really fun. We're almost like improvising a lot of this stuff, which is really fun.
Cool, awesome. So you can find out more about that in a few minutes, so.
Yeah, just rush over to the audience.
So these guys don't get in trouble, we should probably let them go. John has to run off to a play he's in rehearsal for, where he's on stage in 15 minutes.
Yeah. If you guys are in town, I'm doing a play about the torture at Abu Ghraib in Iraq, and it's a rock musical.
It's an act theater, which is right down the street.
We open up on the 9th of Friday. What now?
Better get it to work.
They had a performance that's starting on Wednesday. And I saw a workshop of this show 2 years ago, and it's very serious. Yes, it's a musical, but it's very serious. Yes. And John plays, among other people, Dick Cheney. This is a good place to meet people because there are a lot of game developers here. So if you want to talk to Supergiant, you want to have a card, you want to exchange cards, you want to say, can I email you my demo, I have your little MP3 file, and don't do a mass attack, but do an individual reaching out to different companies, because a lot of companies need actors, need people starting out. A friend of mine, I'm gonna plug the PAX Pink Party tonight, which is put on by my friend Charlie Logan, who's also a voice actor. And you know, this is what Charlie does. He reaches out to people and says, hey, I'm available, use me. So don't be shy, Cedric. Don't be shy. And I think that Logan and Darren would have things to add.
Yeah, I mean, that all sounds really good. I mean, going to shows like this, like GDC and things where there are a lot of developers there, and making connections not only with developers, but I think other voice actors, because I've sort of seen a little bit of that side of things as well, and it seems like it's a pretty supportive community, and people who have that kind of resource that you're looking for are those people who, you know, at various success levels in that sort of train will have, you know, the kind of more specific information you're looking for, I think. I think just make personal connections, try to make friends with people who are doing what you do, and then people who are on the other side of it as well.
And also just try and make yourself and your work, like your demo or your clips, as easy to find as possible. Just so, you know, if somebody's interested, let's go here. It's all here.
Cool. That's right. We should probably keep going.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm just a fan of like theater and video games. I love. That's why I'm like a big part of why I love voice acting so much. I guess I'm just curious how much improv is used in the process of like recording everything. If like, I mean, like how it probably depends on the project and stuff. But like, I guess I'm just curious how much you guys end up like seeing improv throughout the recording process.
You want to jump in on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there's some improv involved for sure. Like we do that for warming up mostly. We don't have like a lot of improv stuff that goes into that actually gets into the game.
Yeah.
But we certainly do that to keep ourselves sane while we're recording, just for fun. But yeah, for the most part, there's not a ton of these in the projects that we've worked on so far, as far as that goes.
Well, I mean, when we did rehearsals, like on Church of Madness, we did that table reads and stuff. Ahead of time, there was times when you or John would say, like, oh, I don't think this line really, I mean, it was all written out. But
John and I became so close to our characters that we actually would tell Richard at times, like, I wouldn't say this.
And sometimes I would agree, and sometimes I would say, no.
Of course, you know, Richard was the decider. So we recorded everything he wanted, but as an actor, you really do get close to your character, and you start feeling like they do, and you just kind of know what you would say and what you would say. And I have done some improv performing, not much, some. But I know that Stephen Merchant and J.K. Simmons, a lot of what they did in Portal 2 was improv. Because the writers told me that. So.
I didn't write that garbage.
All right, let's go over here.
So I know it takes a lot of practice to be able to kind of get to a place where you are confident in your talent and what you're doing. What do you guys do to get to kind of the level where you are now, or for those who are on the developer side, what have you seen voice actors do to kind of bring themselves up to the standard?
The more you do, the better you are. And you have to keep your chops up. So every opportunity to act is an opportunity to use your craft and learn about it. So we do best what we do most. So if you love something, you know, I can't make John stop playing the guitar. He loves it. So he's good at it. So we must all, Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss. If you love it, do it.
Yeah, classes, big classes. If you're an actor, I was in a Q&A with Ellen Burstyn, and this was a question that she got, and she said, yeah, take classes. Because when you think, like musicians, they don't only do their thing when they're playing shows. And acting is not a thing you can do every day. because you have to be cast in something, you need permission, you can't just roll out of bed and do it. But you can, you know, there's not a morning that goes by that I don't do some sort of mobile thing. I try and stay in classes, I try and consume as much theater and acting wherever I can find it. It's hard. The consistency is hard. It's the only way you get good.
And another thing, actually, that so we took a class with, speaking of classes, we took a class with
Jennifer Hale.
Jennifer Hale. And one of her pieces of advice, which seems really dumb and simple, but it is totally awesome, is just read aloud every single day. That's it. Like, that, just that simple act. Because part of the thing that's so crazy about voice acting is a lot of times you do not get the script in advance at all. So it's practice and cold reading a lot of it. So just practicing reading stuff for the first time every day is a huge, huge advantage that you can give yourself.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Ellen, oh my gosh. I am a big fan of Pacific Rim.
Oh.
I went to see it in IMAX 6 times in the movie theater in the first 2 weeks.
I watched it that many times.
And it's for the size, you know. And my favorite part of the movie is when you put all the characters in distress because the computer wouldn't shut down. So I got burned in my head the line in your voice. It says,
"Would you like to try again?"
Simulation ended. Would you like to try again? And everybody in the cinema laughed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have that line. It's burning my brain. So my question for you is, how was to work with Guillermo del Toro, and how was your personal reaction when you went to the movie theater and you made everybody laugh with just a simple line?
Well, Guillermo del Toro is a genius.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved working with him. I recorded a lot of lines for that movie. And del Toro and Becky Sullivan, who was in charge of helping him choose which Gypsy Danger lines would actually be used. And it was great going to the cast screening, and it was like, oh, I got to laugh. You know, that was wonderful, but if you like the movie, You have to start listening to sort of below the primary actors, because you kind of hear Gypsy Danger all along saying these little things all along. So you kind of have to listen below the surface of the film to actually hear me very much. So it was great. He was a big Portal fan. That's why he wanted me to do the film. Ultimately, Val gave them the equation of processing my voice. Ultimately, he chose sort of a different processing, but I did the GLaDOS read because that's what he wanted. And at the first session, I was up here at Clatter and Din, and he was down in LA, and his daughter came to the recording session because she's a big Portal fan. So I'm very proud of that work, and Guillermo, I will work with you anytime.
I've been waiting for you.
Excellent. Next question.
This question is also for Ellen. I'm a professional musician. I've been singing professionally since I was 8. I have a degree in piano performance, and I'm actually going into the studio to record my own original musical in a couple months.
Great.
So,
playing the piano is very useful.
It is, especially as a composer. But so my question for you is, just as a musician, I'm curious, in voicing like a robotic character, did you find that there were any particular like musical intervals?
Oh, totally.
That you kept going back to?
No, I studied it because what I first learned was the computer generated voices pitch range.
Okay.
And so that got in my ear, and as a musician, it was like, oh, this is the pitch. And so I would just ride those pitches. So I think that all my music training helped me do voices. I've ultimately, my training is in music. Ultimately, when I moved to New York after school, I started taking acting classes because you cannot be a voice actor unless you can act.
Right.
So I started taking acting classes, but it was later when my husband finally made me get a voice demo that all of my experience helped me. So, and good luck with your project.
Thank you.
And keep putting it out there.
We are.
Another question?
Yes, hi, I'm Chris, I'm a voice actor. Actually, Logan and I share a credit on codename Cygnus.
Oh, God.
It's great work on that.
Did that come out yet?
Yes. Yeah, so hopefully. Yes. But my question is for Darren and Richard as a professional voice actor. So it seems like you're pulling from, I'm going to age myself, your Rolodex of individuals that you've worked with throughout your lives. But are you also going the agency route and trying to interview and get auditions through that, or is it more on a personal level where you both are looking for the people who you know? Because I would love the experience of getting in there and actually talking about the character with you guys or with anyone. It's more, you know, most of the experiences that I've had are, you know, 600 cues. So, you know, you are under the gun and need to be extremely efficient and ABC. But really, you know, it's been a warm day, and you guys have obviously had some warm experiences, so I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I mean, we haven't really reached out to agencies yet. I mean, we sort of, on this current project, we've expanded our search pool a bit and used a little bit of some internet tools and ended up not really finding anything. You know, we just kind of ended up just reaching out to people we knew and contacts we've made over the years. For the most part, and have had good luck with that. And our experience with that has just been so much more positive than the other routes. Just for us, you know, having there be slightly less time pressure is like a really valuable thing for us. Even though, you know, having to do it efficiently, we have a lot of lines to report. Part of it is we like to do a lot of takes. We like to just make sure we get it right and things like that. So having, you know, working with people who are willing to work, you know,
the way you guys work.
Yeah, work kind of the way we work is really beneficial for us.
I mean, I've done all sorts of different projects. I mean, this one that I'm doing was very much targeted, like, I want John, and of course, then I want Helen, and then I've got only two other actors who are both people I knew. One of them I worked with before, one of them I haven't, if it works out, but they were both, like, people I specifically went after. But on many other previous projects, yeah, definitely agencies, and like I've been to like 20 leads for a line. And I mean, that's how I first cast John the first time, because I was the first thing I had done in Seattle, in Seattle talent. So it was definitely like, what's the agency got? And picking from that, was like a asking for retakes from certain people and that. So yeah, I mean, I think most, I've worked in AAA, like Ubisoft and Microsoft and stuff, and those processes are very much pulling from agencies. See a lot of people, and they may say, oh, we like this person because we know you're in this sort of show or they're in this other game or whatever, but they do listen to a lot of other stuff and find people who have, find people who haven't done stuff before sometimes. Because, you know, a lot of these stuff like Deus Ex, I'm sure like half of their characters had not, because they've got so many of them, they had people from many different sources. Elias, you know, Elias, mispronounce it, Elias is in Montreal, the Becker's
Elias.
I know we were talking about it before, and I just fucked up. But so he's not here. But he's really well known in Montreal. He used to live. I was in Toronto, he was in LA, since he's getting bigger. But he was known as one of the guys in Montreal who did really nail stuff, particularly Claire characters, which was a special thing. So he had a reputation. Everyone's like, oh yeah, you're getting Elias, you should know that. So there is a getting known, but on the big projects, you're going all over. So agencies are great if they're getting your stuff. Having to do like sample reads and stuff, but definitely. Another question over here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 5 minutes left, so
okay.
Move my phone.
My name is Connor, and I have this question is for both Logan and Ellen. My question is if either one of you could voice whichever character you wanted, which character would that be and why? It's somebody you haven't already done before.
Who wants to go?
Queen Elizabeth I.
No one has ever asked you this question before. They're always like, here, play this.
Yeah. This answer sucks, but it's the truth. I don't have like a dream role. I don't have a mission.
Batman. I'd like to hear you.
Batman, yeah.
Awesome. Let's roll into the next.
Chloe, you're up.
Logan. I have a question for you too, Logan and Ellen. What's your favorite line that you had to do?
Ever?
So my favorite line that I've had Logan do was actually not a line that appeared in the game. I would have him read. I had a cereal box that I would make him read from. Or yeah, to get in the character, I would make him read it. Yeah, in the voice of the character a few times, and it would be like the nutritional facts. It was like harvest wheat cereal or whatever.
Or the D&D like monster manual.
Oh yeah, I had him read from the monster manual as well. I had him read about Shayu's. Yeah. So that's
a good answer. Is that magic?
I don't remember the line, but yeah.
Shades are a magical creature that
yeah.
Here's a line from the Church in the Darkness. So they are coming for us. No matter where we go, they will send their killers to murder us in our homes. They will infiltrate us. They will sabotage us. They will try to kidnap our people.
I have a good one, but
whoever just came by, he stole it. my voice request, you guys are going to kill me for this. Ever play Overwatch?
No. I know about
all right.
Bad character. Really screwing up my mentions.
All right, here it goes. And you're saying whatever Western accent you want. It's high noon.
It's high noon.
If you guys want to meet John and Ellen, I know John had to leave early, but they're going to be at our booth tomorrow from 3 to 4, which is up on the 6th floor at number 7009. I think if you want to meet you guys, they'll be at the Supergiant booth, probably for eventually at the time or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to go back to the Church in the Darkness booth right now, so I am going back there now.
Yeah, we'll hang out for questions afterwards if you guys see that.
Cool, thanks everybody for coming.